Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hour number two here on a Patriots Monday, live at Gillette Stadium. Christian Arkin, Andy Hart down here in the newly refurbished Patriots studios. I think they did Patriots.com. They still do that in here, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or they kick those guys out. Saying, no,
they're in here.
Too nice for you.
The PU crew.
PU crew. I was part of that crew for, when I was between jobs. They were nice enough to take me in, let me take some
nice
calls. It was nice, yeah. And it was in the old studio, which is a lot different from this one. Anyways.
And now I've got you.
Yeah, now you got me. It's basically just like, it's like a Make-A-Wish program. I just get passed around different shows. Anyway, there we go. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. What you just heard was Gerard Mayo this morning in this studio with the Greg Hill Show. That was Courtney Cox asking him about Jacoby Brissett, who you saw. And I saw this when we talked to him on Monday. There's like, you know, he has some, like, scrapes on his arm, and I thought that was from last week, but I saw him again on TV last night, and he is taking a lot of punishment. Asked if he was okay. They said, we'll see if he's okay. We'll get him checked out by the doctor and the team staff and all of that. It wasn't a definite yes by any means.
No.
But we're also talking about, okay, so what if they talk to him and realize, oh, no, there's something going on here, and you got to turn to Drake May on a short week.
That won't be ideal.
No, definitely not ideal. And I know you want Drake May to play, so do I. This is probably the one week out of the entire season where you'd be like, all right, maybe not this one.
Especially, we had some news out of Carolina that they are benching Bryce Young. And I think a lot of people are using Bryce Young as the not ready, break a quarterback, make sure it's the right time kind of example. But I would say maybe the flip side of that is, and I believe Drake May is a confident guy.
Mm-hmm.
You might be able to just tell him, listen, we have no expectations. We know this is not ideal.
Right.
We know you're going on the road against the rival Jets, against a Hall of Fame quarterback and a great defense. You got nothing to lose. Go out there and just play football like you've been playing for the last 8 years of your life and see what happens. So I think there is a little bit of that, nothing to lose type attitude. But no, I would prefer not to see him this week. But I do think... I think I've said this to you before in various areas, whether it's this team, the Red Sox, sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
Ask the question, it's not sustainable what they are doing with Jacoby Brissett, the hits he is taking. It feels like he must have a litany of not necessarily injuries, but things that are hurting coming off the first 2 weeks, because there's been portions of both of those games where I was like, Is he getting up? Is
yeah.
he going to stay up? Is he going to stay in the game? And again, the broadcast was terrible, so they showed none of it. But yesterday I was wondering, is Drake May even warming up? Is he? Because he wouldn't know exactly what's going on, but he's a smart kid. He probably goes, oh, he's getting up slow and he's limping.
Yeah.
I should probably get with a receiver and throw the football.
Get loose a little bit.
Yeah.
He's still on the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. And it never led to anything. And I think Jacoby Brissett's a tough guy. But if he continues to get hit, like I just went back and watched. I just signed up for the whole I can do the all 22 crew thing.
Yes, and you've not
in the break.
Stopped annoying us with.
Well, I didn't know that the all.
Time.
Oh well, yeah, the next gen stats. Wait till I start unloading some of these.
Already, I'm tired.
Depth of throw of completion is the longest and shortest, and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But I went back to the sack before the 48-yard field goal.
Right.
It was jailbreak city. I don't know what Jacoby Brissett was supposed to do there. There was his right guard got beat. His right tackle got beat. There's just guys coming at him. You know, might have been one of those if he'd thrown it away. It would have been intentional grounding anyway.
Right.
So, but he is under duress, and there's been a lot of hits that I think lesser quarterbacks, quite honestly, if we go back to the beginning of his career, I don't want to throw shade on anybody,
mm-hmm.
but if Jimmy Garoppolo were taking the beating over the last 2 weeks that Jacoby Brissett has taken, I don't believe Jimmy Garoppolo would still be in the game.
Yeah, he'd be out. I mean, we saw that all happen the first time around.
Yep.
Like he gets banged up, and that's it for him. And sometimes that is a better option, right? Like, Jimmy Garoppolo at 60% is not going to give you anything, so you go to your backup.
Right.
That's basically the what they're going to have to weigh here. And I think that's sort of unfair to Brissett, because – we know 100% of Drake May is probably better than 100% of Brissett. So now you have Brissett injured, and you can't really do that sort of backup math that you do when it's a guy that you really want out there, you know? So that's going to be an interesting decision that they're going to end up having to make here. And I wonder, we'll ask him when he gets here, how Jacoby Brissett's feeling, how those legs are. I mean, you saw him reaching for his leg after that Leonard Williams sack, and they didn't really have him throwing that much, you know? So you kind of wonder maybe how the arm is, too.
And you never know when the adrenaline kind of goes away.
Right.
And then you combine it with short week. So if you're the medical staff, whatever you might have thought, okay, we'll rest him on Monday, Tuesday, we'll do this on Wednesday, Thursday, building towards Sunday. Oh, nope, you can't do any of that. You're going to build towards a Thursday night. So it's far less than ideal, and either situation is ideal. Don't tell me Jacoby Brissett's going to feel good going out there against the Jets defense. He's
right.
Not going to feel good. He's not going to be 100%. Or if you were for some reason forced, because Jerod Mayo has been noncommittal throughout the day. He had the Greg Hill show this morning. He had his press conference earlier this afternoon. He's been noncommittal on seemingly everything. All these guys, he even brought up the idea that some guys are getting MRIs and second opinions. And I'm like, who's that?
Yeah, who's getting any of that?
I mean, there's Juwan Bentley, for example, left the game, didn't return.
Oh, yeah, right.
There's already a report that he avoided major injury and should be good to go on Thursday. So that's great. The guy who left the game is good to go on Thursday. How about the guy that stayed in the game but looked like he was really getting the snot kicked out of him? Is he going to be able to go?
Yeah, good question. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go to Steve in Fall River. Hi, Steve.
How are you guys?
Good, Steve. What's up?
I've been telling you that I've been texting my friends a lot, and my autocorrect in my text for Brissett comes up brisket, as in the brisket of beef. And I'm figuring, I'm going to leave it that way. I'm not trying to autocorrect it. Leave it at this. He looks like a brisket, a side of beef out there, the way he is black in the Uber Billy. In the meantime, I've heard people pining for the sage game planning of Bill Belichick. He would have went on 4th-and-1. He would have done this. He would have done that. Obviously, the play was not to go on 4th-and-1. Didn't that ball get punted to the 15-yard line? Am I remembering this correctly?
4th-and-1, they ended up getting stopped on 3rd-and-1, and then they punted. Yeah, they punted away after that, and it was a pretty good punt, I think.
Didn't they receive the ball like the 15-yard
line? Yeah, it was a good punt.
Okay.
He had one. Behringer had one bad punt at one point, but that wasn't it, I don't think.
But you said the strength 16. Of their game is running, and they couldn't get it on 3rd-and-1, and defense, and they couldn't hold the team and their own 15-yard line. So their two top strengths let them down at crunch time. If they were on the road, maybe the play would have been to go on 3rd-and-1, but not where it was. Bill Belichick, the ghost of Bill Belichick, wasn't in his play calling. It was DK Metcalf, and it was Jacoby Brissett. DK Metcalf, because we all know we could have had him. Jacoby Brissett, because he ruined the guy down in Jacksonville sitting behind that yo-yo. This guy, the Trevor Lawrence, the cream of his crop. He's now 20 and 32. So guess what? My prediction that Mac Jones is going to be traded to the Miami Dolphins out the window.
Okay.
He might be taking over for Trevor Lawrence.
For Trevor Lawrence, that's entirely possible. Thanks for the call, Steve.
He might be taking over. Yeah, exactly.
Very possible. Thank you. All right, very good. Thanks for the call, Steve. We gave you a long time there. Bill Belichick, I think, was in terms of that game, I mean, we talked about how week one, it was a win that was like a Bill Belichick kind of win, right?
Yep.
That was sort of the type of game that they've been losing for the last couple of years, too. You know, bad situational football, offense can't get out of its own way. The defense not great when it needed to be. Like, you think back to the last, I don't know, certainly last year and even the year before that, they lost a bunch of games like that with Bill Belichick.
I would say less sloppy than some of their situational failures over the last few years because they weren't killed by penalties.
Right.
Now, they had a penalty, but it's a questionable pass interference.
That was one of three flags they had all day.
And it was a competitive penalty. Like, that's not an idiotic penalty.
Mm-hmm.
That is a guy competing that, according to the refs, he crossed the line, right? But it wasn't lining up offsides on a field goal attempt or some of these things that we've seen in recent years that are really egregious. Now, the Caden Wallace formational penalty and reporting and not reporting and covered up, and I still don't really know exactly what went on there on that penalty with Caden Wallace, but that's a little closer to the sloppiness we've seen in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also, I think, a byproduct of injuries and guys moving around and roles, and Caden Wallace is the jumbo tight end.
Yep.
Now he's the left tackle, but now we need him as the jumbo tight end. So just sort of confusion. That's unfortunate. That's probably a learning experience for Van Pelt, Mayo, Scott Peters, Caden Wallace, the whole crew as they went through that. But no, I didn't think it was quite honestly as sloppy as some of the recent losses of the Belichick era.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We're going to get trending here from Stiz, and when we come back, we'll get to more of your phone calls. And what was the turning point in that game? We have a couple of options here, and we'll revisit some of their more questionable decisions. That's all coming.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Coming up next. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. It's Christian Arkin, Andy Hart, WEEI Afternoons. We are live from Gillette Stadium. We just talked with Jonathan Jones. We're hoping to talk with Jacoby Brissett a little bit later on in the show. Pearl Jam was at Fenway last night. You know anyone who went to that show?
No. Did they get into a fight or anything?
No. Unfortunately, not as cool as Jane's Addiction with Perry Farrell just freaking out and attacking his guitars. It seemed like it was a great big love fest up there with what's his name? Peter Gammons was up on stage. They brought Gammons up there. He's a big Pearl Jam guy. And seemed like everybody was getting along. No one threw any punches at anyone.
That's too bad.
Pretty boring, if you ask me. There you go. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Let's continue with your phone calls, because we got a lot of you wanting to sound off on this loss. A tough loss for the Patriots. A winnable game. Let's go to Kurt on the Cape, who has a thought on the 4th-and-1. Go ahead, Kurt.
Hey, how you doing today?
Doing well, Kurt. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. I was doing great, man. They had that game totally under control till that fourth quarter. And I'm going to tell you something. And what I love what they're doing there. I love where the direction is kind of going. But Jacoby Brissett taking that sack was just unbelievable. But on that fourth down, you have to go for it. You're still up 3. Your defense is at least going to hold them to that and then get you more time and then go into overtime. But you have to take that risk at this time. You're a new coach, but risk has to be taken.
The 4th-and-1 wasn't overtime.
The
4th-and-1 wasn't overtime.
Yeah, the 4th-and-1 was the first possession of overtime.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But they should have did it because they lost control of the ball. They lose control. Complete control. Even if they did it, though, and then held them to a field goal, do you understand? I know it was overtime, but, I think they could have stopped them. I think they could have made the fourth. I do. I think they could have made it.
Well, they could have.
Thanks for the call.
They also might not have because they couldn't line up or get a yard on the previous play.
Right.
And in the
fourth quarter on that last drive, too, they got stopped a couple of times on short runs. And I don't know. I mean, if you give the ball back to that team on the 39-yard line, the game is 100% over right there. No one is doubting that they're, if
not
they're not already in field goal range, I mean, that's it. You're basically conceding the game there if you don't get that one yard.
But you want to be a big pelotas football team that relies on its running game. You had an opportunity to send a massive message. It may have been a message that you're a bad coach and an idiot, or it may have been a message that you have great faith in your running game.
Right.
I'm just saying there was an opportunity to send.
Could have sent some kind of message.
Some kind of message. And
but I think the message of, hey, we're going to give this to our defense and lean on them was a perfectly fine message and a reasonable message to send.
Especially
there.
After we just lined up and couldn't line up or couldn't run the ball a yard. We just proved we couldn't do it. So why are we going to do it on fourth down when the game, as you said, is pretty much on the line, when everyone tells me the best part of this team is the defense?
Yep.
It's got the best players, the best chances, the best ability to help you win football games. So give them a shot. And as Steve, as much as I hate to quote Steve from Fall River, it pains me to do so, the punter put the ball on the 16-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of worked.
Yeah.
Because you're now going to play a field position battle. If my great defense holds them and they punt, I should get the ball back approaching midfield. Except I never got the ball back. I lost. Mm-hmm. So who's that on, Gerard Mayo or the defense?
The refs. It was the refs, the zebras.
We're not doing the refs thing.
I'm not doing
that. We were polite. We didn't argue. Mm-mm. You didn't even tell Jonathan Jones that you flat out disagreed with his view of the call.
I didn't think that added much to the
I agree.
Also, it was a time for him to talk. Not
yes.
really. No one cares what I think about it.
Correct. Yeah. So, but, I mean, it was a, I guess, questionable call, but they absolutely did not get screwed completely by the refs.
I agree. All right, let's go to Tony in Bridgewater. Go ahead, Tony.
Quoting the Fugazi from Fall River. Listen, let's get something straight here. I'm not a Brissett basher, and I'm not going to bash the guy. Yeah. It's like the Red Sox lineup. To me, he's very, very limited. It's not his fault. He seems like a nice guy, but we can't go on with this guy quarterbacking. Two plays in two games over 25 yards. The receivers, I don't blame him for being disgusted. They're not even targeting these guys. And I know you want to, you don't have time. That's a lot of crap. You need a guy to control the ball downfield. It's 2024 NFL. This dink and dunk stuff, it's not cutting it.
All right, thanks for the call, Tony. Appreciate it. I would contend with this. Number one, he was throwing the ball to Hunter Henry. Hunter Henry got open, and he was finding him. He maybe zoomed in on him a little bit and was unable to look anywhere else, and maybe that was just sort of a middle-of-the-field thing. He was also on the run a ton. There was one play I kept seeing, or I've seen it online. It's like, well, I understand why Pop Douglas was mad. He was running across the field wide open. Brissett's on the move in the other direction. I mean, that happened over and over again. The right side of that line broke down more times, it seemed like, than it held up. And that was Onwenu, which was disturbing. I think we both agree. Like, when Mike Onwenu's out there getting turnstiled, then what hope do the other guys have? What hope does Vidarian Lowe have, or anybody else on the inside there? It seemed like the Seattle defense, up front anyway, was very good at mixing up their coverage, sort of picking out mismatches, picking out guys that they wanted to attack, and getting to Jacoby Brissett. I mean, they got to him over and over and over again. He got hit a bunch, and he was running for his life. I think there was only two actual runs for gain, but the amount of times he had to come out of the pocket and throw on the run, I mean, I lost count. It was so many. It was just, that's not his game.
No.
You know, like, it's not, it's become his game now. He has to be his game, but, like, that's not, when you think of Jacoby Brissett, you don't think of this on-the-run, improvising type of guy. Like, he'll drop backs, survey the field. That's when he's at his best.
And I have a little working theory here, because as we all know, his head coach said he's the slowest black quarterback in the league last week.
He did say that, yes.
His head coach, not me, Gerard Mayo, guy who said that. Just want to make that clear. I don't think he's that quick. And I think, therefore, under duress and pressure, he has to anticipate getting out of trouble more than an actual quick athlete would. And this is not a shot at him, but, like, for example, Drake May is a more athletic, quicker, younger, mobile quarterback. I think he could possibly hang in a half a second longer, three quarters of a second longer, whereas Brissett has to anticipate it. So I actually think it's not just the pressure that's getting to him, it's the him knowing the pressure is coming with regularity and maybe having to give up on plays a half a second earlier than he'd like to. But that doesn't solve all the questions with the passing game.
No.
I continue to go back to the guy who is supposed to be the get open quickly in a phone booth guy, DeMario Douglas. I'm not looking for you to hold the ball. I learned something on Sunday Night Football last night. I don't know if you watched Chris Collinsworth going through the whole thing that 2.5 seconds is par in terms of the NFL passing game.
Right.
Anything like plays are kind of designed to 2.5 and below. Anything beyond that. Well, my newfound fantasy stats on next gen, it's like 3.06 time to throw.
That's like all day.
For Brissett.
Yeah.
But some of it's on the run because he's running for his life, so it's not designed plays.
It's not because the pocket's holding up for 3 seconds. No,
absolutely not. I'd like to see 3 second pockets. There's been very few of those. So, how about the quick hitters? And I don't know enough about the Browns passing game that they mimeographed and brought here to New England and called it Alex Van Pelt's. Do they not use the slot receiver in some of those short, quick, underneath routes as much? I saw it in practice. I thought I saw some of that on the practice field when DeMario Douglas was Jacoby Brissett's favorite receiver, and yet it's gone. And it hasn't been, because I don't think you're going to get time to throw. I think if you think we're suddenly, unless you really scheme it up and it's kind of a trick play or you really get the defense sucked up, a hard play action pass or some zone boot thing, you're not going to get a lot of protection.
Well, if you're not getting that, then isn't it sort of wrong to expect them to be getting chunk plays down the field?
Yes, I mean, that's my point.
Have a bunch of burners on wide receivers
point.
Either. Yeah.
I want to get to, I don't know, throw the ball to DeMario Douglas or even Tyquan Thornton. Try some of those slants.
The screen.
I mean, Jerry Rice, this is dumb. I don't know why I said Jerry Rice and Tyquan Thornton in the same damn sentence, but.
Just be like Jerry Rice, Tyquan Thornton.
Remember when Jerry Rice, this is a West Coast offense, right?
Yes.
Okay. Remember when Jerry Rice used to just run a little slant and then turn it upfield and it would turn a 3-yard catch into a 45-yard play?
I remember those days.
Is there any reason Tyquan Thornton can't do that?
Because
you're not getting the time to – okay, it was a rhetorical question.
Right.
I don't want an answer. I'm not Schefter. I'm not waiting for an answer. But is there any reason you can't do some of that to inject life in the passing game? Because the protection is not going to get better. I don't know who's playing left tackle. I'll also tell you the guy who makes – $20 million or $18 million a year that was playing right tackle, he wasn't very good either.
No.
And he's supposed to be your best offensive lineman. I'm starting
that
to really
That was the worst part of that.
He should be a guard. I'm starting to they're right. He's a guard.
Yeah.
He might be your only option at right tackle, but he was part of the problem, not the solution yesterday.
Yeah.
And if he's a problem, then we're just porked on
then
the
Then you line. Got nothing.
You
yeah.
got nothing. Robinson, you got David Andrews.
Robinson's been fine at right guard. I've been okay with him. So, you know, you want to move him out there.
He got beat on that sack, I believe.
They all got beat yesterday.
He got beat on that key sack. So I'm not anointing any of them fine. The protection's a problem, but you're going to have to scheme around the protection because I don't think it's going to get miraculously better. So that puts it back on Alex Van Pelt to find a way to scheme plays into the passing game that are realistic.
And it's interesting because there were a couple of those creative little screens to Hunter Henry, right? There was two of them that I remember that both worked. And I watched them and thought, okay, this seems creative. This seems a little bit more different than, you know, this old-timey 4 yards in a cloud of dust type of offense that they're going for here where they're just running over and over again.
But
this is something else.
Again, is that sustainable?
No.
Are we going to rely on the screens?
But you can try it out with other people. I mean, it was all just Hunter Henry.
Slants,
like, you can try and get
cuts,
other people involved.
Drags, quick routes out of the slot. I mean, I watched a lot of Josh McDaniels and those guys over the years, and they seem to find a way to do it. And I think DeMario Douglas is talented. I think he can get open. I think he's quick. I think there's times where he should win his matchups.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to rely.
He thinks that, too.
He thinks that. Well, I should be saying it. I get paid to say it on the radio. He should keep his mouth shut and be a second-year player who's happy to be on the team.
Yeah, agree with that, too. 617-779-7937. Let's go to Ryan in Boston. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Just
what's up, Ryan?
And I think this show's great. I think you guys are great together so far.
Thanks, Ryan.
Hey, my problem with the loss yesterday is since Jump Street, Gerard Mayo has been saying, I make the decisions. I'm my own man. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. But yet, he does the exact same thing that Belichick did in the last two overtime games. 4th-and-1 comes, he punts the ball. They did it against the Cowboys. They did it against the Packers. You're telling me the Browns didn't have one play? I know they don't have a lot of beef as far as extra offensive linemen, but you're telling me you can't put Keon White as a fullback? Jacoby Brissett is a big dude, 6'4", 230. It's not little ass Mac Jones, 6'3", 210. Line him up, run the ball down their throat. And if it's Mayo who makes the decision, yeah, exactly. And if it's Mayo who makes the decision and they fail, he's a first-year head coach, he put his nuts on the table and told Seattle to deal with it, and they dealt with it. So what? But at least give him credit for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand, and we've talked about this a couple of times now, Ryan, but I think leaning on your defense in that spot is the smarter move. I just do.
Yeah.
I don't believe so much in the running game that I think it's a guarantee they're going to pick that up. They just got stuffed right before then, and in the fourth quarter they got stopped after that big Gibson run. So it's like, you know, I thought that they putting Gibson in there was a nice change of pace. But Seattle was not letting you run all over them anymore. Like that thing that you did against Cincinnati at the end of the game, Seattle was ready for that, and they were as conditioned as you were, and they didn't let you have it in the same way. Which, you know, these are in some ways, we talked about how the teams are mirror images of each other. They both talked a lot about conditioning and being fresh at the end of the games, and Seattle was a little bit fresher than you.
You did not take them to the hill.
No. You did not.
That T-shirt, that slogan, that desire, that lasted 1 week.
Right.
We'll see if it comes back at some point, but the whole take him to the hill, because that was a take him to the hill drive.
Yes.
Right? That you take the ball there, you're trying to take him to the hill. You want to control the clock, drive down, win the game. And you did the opposite of that. You couldn't get a first down. You didn't go for it on fourth down. You couldn't get the third down. And you couldn't even line up on third down. And I put that in the decision as well. I continue to go back to that. So you want now an even more different type decision where you put Keon White is on the field on offense, and who's playing left tackle, and I just, you weren't ready for it. You weren't ready for that situation.
Yeah, I don't think so either. By the way, I'm getting told right now that Jacoby Brissett may be coming in at 5:30 because there's team meetings coming up here, and maybe there was something that held him up
Okay.
Before he can come to team meetings. Don't know what that is.
But he's alive and well.
I'm just telling you, he's alive and well, and they're going to try and get him in here at 5:30 is what it is looking like, and who knows, maybe he walks in the door in 2 seconds. But it seems like that's when we're going to be talking with Jacoby Brissett. We'll let you know if anything changes there. Let's take one more call here before the break. Dan is in Seattle. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, guys. Great show. I really like kind of following up with the opposing team to see what people are saying about the game and, and how it went. I think you guys drafted somebody this year that is the next Lawyer Malloy for this team. Not at strong safety, but a wide receiver. And so I got to watch Jalen Polk play for the last 3 years, and I'm surprised Gonzalez isn't talking him up, because in 2022, Gonzalez was playing for Oregon, and they pretty much shut Odunze out, the star wide receiver at Washington, and Jalen Polk and Jalen McMillan lit him up for 230 yards and two TDs. And Polk had 95 yards on three catches with a touchdown. And he
had a touchdown
already
yesterday, too. I don't know if you saw it, Dan. It was the only time you saw him at all, but he got in the end zone.
But they're not, they need to move him up on the progression priorities, the route progression priorities, because he got open a bunch of times, but he clearly was the third or fourth read most of the time. And when teams can go in like Seattle did and say, hey, we're going to cover Thornton and Douglas, beat us with your tight ends, which why did they go away from that after the first part of the second half?
Well, Dan, I think I have an answer for that, and that is that they put an extra emphasis on Hunter Henry, and that was really the only one that Jacoby Brissett felt comfortable throwing to for most of the game. I think they started giving him some extra attention. They gave Keon White some extra attention up on the offensive line, chipping him, double-teaming him, and those were the two guys who were most effective in the first half, and they got neutralized in the second half. Seattle did a great job making adjustments. The Patriots, not so much, and I think it's really as simple as that. You know, I don't think it goes too much further into hardcore X's and O's. I mean, you know, other people might disagree, but I saw something that was working in the first half. I saw the other team adjust to it on both sides of the ball, and I didn't really see the same thing for New England.
Yeah, no, they put Julian Love on him. They, you know, instead of using linebackers and disregarding him sort of as an old tight end, they said, huh, this old tight end might be the best they have.
Kicking our ass here.
So why don't we put a safety that can actually run with him on him, and they slowed it down. The Polk stuff, do I think he could be the guy? He was another guy that got a lot of targets in the summer that I think people were hopeful for, that he was building not only a rapport with Brissett, but that there were times where it looked like he was building a rapport with Drake May for whenever he gets on the field as two young guys that might be able to inject life in this. He had the touchdown. We'll see. I don't think he gets a ton of separation. I was looking at his separation numbers on my fancy next-gen stats. They weren't great.
No.
And that's part of it, too. If a guy's not going to be very open, and I'm under a lot of duress as a quarterback, that even compounds the issue trying to get him the football,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, just look away, and I'm sure like, you don't
Jesus.
Look back. Yeah, that's it.
I mean, that guy's really close to him, so I'm moving on to the next look.
Right.
So that's where I think there's no one area of this passing game that I think is the reason that the passing game isn't very good. If you say receivers, okay, I'll accept that. If I say quarterback, okay. I think that's – if Brian says – you know, offensive line, pass protection, I'll accept that. Like, those are all factors in why you're not good enough in the passing game.
Yeah, 100%. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll continue with your phone calls. And over the weekend, yesterday, as a matter of fact, a broadcasting legend announced his retirement right here on these airwaves. We'll get to that next.
And did he make the catch? He did! He got it!
The Red Sox win!
The Red Sox win.
I just went head over heels in my chair.
Sale winds. He fires.
Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship. The Boston Red Sox beat the Los Angeles Dodgers 5-1. They win the World Series 4-1. And the Red Sox become the first team in the 21st century with 4 World Championships. Can you believe it?
To my man Joe, very proud of you. Glad that you're part of my life. Glad that you're part of our life, the Red Sox Nation. And I know you're going to be around. You're not going anywhere. But I'm glad that you can dictate what you want to do. You know, enjoy the family. And Hall of Famer, Joe. You're the man. Thank you.
You may have missed it yesterday, and if you did, don't blame you. It was during the Patriots game. The Red Sox were in the midst of getting smacked around by the Yankees at Yankee Stadium, where they lost 3 out of 4 this weekend. Ugh. Fall back to 500 on the year at 75-75. 4.5 games back of that wild card with 12 left to play. But that's not the headline. The headline is that our own Joe Castiglione, Hall of Fame Joe, announced his retirement and that he intends to retire at the end of the season, and he did it during the game broadcast. It was very understated. It wasn't some big look-at-me extravaganza, and not that, you know, it's often like that, especially with announcers. And you know what broadcasting's like. You don't even get to say goodbye half the time. You know, I mean, we've all been down that road. But Joe Castiglione, a tremendous career, career that spanned many decades, the voice of the Red Sox for many lifetimes of fans out there, and a lot of people don't know Red Sox baseball without him. It's going to be a tough adjustment once he stops doing these games. He says full-time. So he said, I'm going to retire from doing full. So I imagine, and you just heard Cora there too, say, we know you're not really going anywhere. He'll still be around. I'd imagine you'll still hear his voice now and again, but as a full-time, almost every night broadcaster, and I know he's taken some more time off recently, this is the end of Joe Castiglione's career, a monumental titan career in the world of sports broadcasting and play-by-play.
Literally the tone of Red Sox Nation, because we've talked a little bit about this before. You know everything from the tone of Joe Castiglione's voice,
right?
The disappointment in his voice or the excitement. And my favorite of all time was the swing and a pop-up. Yeah. I used that when I was coaching youth baseball. I would literally throw batting practice, and every time a kid would have like a weak pop-up, a swing and a pop-up, I would use it on the damn kids. They must have gotten so sick of it. But I loved that. Like, you could just – his emotional tie to the results of – that at bat, that inning, that game, that investment that he had, which is why he's good at it. Like, if you don't care, I feel like people know you don't care. Then you just become Syracuse boy or whatever. They think you're just the latest generic Syracuse broadcaster. He was the opposite. He was old school. He was tied into it. And remarkable career. And I listened to Keefe earlier. I do wonder if we're starting to lose these long-termers, long-timers, if you're going to have the same types of...
A lot of guys held on to their, you know, like you think of the Heinsohns and, you know, Clyde Frazier and like a lot of the guys who've been doing it for a long time, they hold on for a long
time. Especially the beloved ones, the Mike Gormans of the world. Joe Castiglione and Mike Gorman, I don't know, does anybody not like them? Is there anybody, you know, almost everybody has skeletons or haters in the closet or Twitter people. I feel like those are two guys that are above the cesspool that is Twitter criticism and hate. I mean, look at Tom Brady getting bitch slapped all across social media.
Sure.
I don't think that's ever happened to Joe Castiglione.
He's only been doing the job for 2 days. But
actually, it turned around. I saw some headlines that were like, after a terrible week one, Brady is less bad week two or something.
Honestly, I watched so little of that Cowboys game, I didn't even know it. When the few times I saw it on Red Zone, I forgot he was even doing it.
Well, and he still doesn't say anything. The part I saw, there was a CeeDee Lamb big play, like catch and run, and he made like one noise. And then didn't say anything. Yeah, like he made a noise and then didn't explain anything, didn't say anything. But no, Joe Castiglione, obviously a legend, and pretty cool that. Now, should I read anything into this? Do you know anything about it? I'm not invited to any knowledge in this place. So,
That he was going to retire?
Yeah,
I had no idea, and I am a gossip slut. Like I got my ear to the ground.
That's
about
what I
all
thought.
Sorts of stuff.
Okay,
I'm always asking. Did anybody know? Especially when it comes to programming changes. If you haven't noticed, like that's something that I'm a little interested in these days. Who's getting hired where, and who's retiring?
Who's getting moved or replaced?
Who's getting moved around? Like all that stuff is very important to me. So I've been ear to the ground, and I had no idea he was going to retire. I had no clue.
So can I give you like a cynical conspiracy theory?
Go ahead.
This is when he put a bullet in this season. Like he knew he was retiring, but he was waiting because he didn't want to. Oh, they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to be the wild card. And yesterday's like, this is over. I might as well tell everyone.
Yeah, right. I tell him now they make the playoffs. Now it's about me all of a sudden. Now I can just sort of
now
ride
he's like,
off
nope,
into the sunset.
Nope, I know that there's not going to be any extra baseball.
It's better than Sterling. Sterling retired after like a week into the start of the season. Remember?
Yeah.
John Sterling, the season started, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to retire right now. That was it, and he was done. And they had to scramble to fill in around him. Castiglione made it the rest of the whole year, at least, before he dropped that bomb, which is, I still want to know what's going on there with Sterling. But for Castiglione, I think it's the longevity of it is certainly part of it. But his tone, tenor, ability to sort of deliver exactly what's happening, even in getting older, still being able to right off the crack of the bat know exactly what's going on out there and deliver that in a way that people are just got so familiar with, so accustomed to. And it's not just about being familiar with it, because not everything familiar is always good. but he was, you know, like it was that everything about his voice and the way he sort of delivered the action to you was stump that you wanted to listen to, like you wanted to hear it.
And ain't nothing but a G thing, baby.
That's right.
Oh boy. And when he dealt with negative things,
yeah,
he did so with a, as I said, disappointing tone, not an aggressive, like I don't know that players ever had a problem like they did with Eckersley,
mm-hmm.
or some of the people that can be a little bit more pointed in their criticism. It's not like Joe was a homer and
right.
just ignored everything bad. You knew immediately when there was
he
a
wouldn't
bad...
like cross lines with the team, but yeah, he
no.
definitely he would say things, yeah,
and his voice would say it all, his
right.
tone, and like, oh, that was terrible, like he would have, but he wouldn't, it didn't feel personal. He was just describing terrible action or
yeah.
terrible results or whatever. I find it hard to believe there was ever anyone that was mad at him. I think they probably felt bad.
Right.
Oh, I made him use the sad tone on the broadcast.
Yeah.
I want to be better tomorrow so people don't have to hear sad Joe Castiglione
yeah.
tone.
Yeah, they weren't up there clapping when Jackie Bradley Jr. got in his face like with Eckersley
right,
or something like
right.
that.
No, it's different. And it's unfortunate, and this is no disrespect to Lou or Will or Sean, or they all, I think, are very good at what
mm-hmm.
they do. But it's going to be different.
Oh, yeah.
Change sucks.
It does.
When I tune in, I'm going to be like, hey, where's Joe? Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Joe doesn't do it anymore.
It's funny you mentioned about his tone, because I remember the first game I worked up in the studio where I was doing, it was in, back in like 2017, we would do in-game around the scoreboard, you know, scoreboard around the league. We'd do,
oh,
we'd
I've
jump
always
in
liked
and do
those.
That.
Are you good at those?
I was all right at that, yeah. I mean, I wasn't
been
terrible
interested
at it.
In those.
But
you got to weave the play-by-play in.
Right, and this was one of the few times I actually got to be at Fenway. Most of the times I was back in the old studio over on the French Street there, and it was tough because, you know, you'd have to listen for the ball hitting the glove, and this time I actually got to be there, and it was my first time meeting Joe, and I was really nervous to even talk to him at all, and they're way down there, and I was sitting up above with Doug Lane, Bragg, and we were just, you know, doing the thing, and then all of a sudden, and the Red Sox were getting their ass kicked. I forget who they were playing, but they were down like 12-3, and they hadn't gotten a hit since like the third inning or something, and Joe walks up the stairs, and he'd been doing the game, and he walks up the stairs, and he sort of looks at me, he looks at Doug, and he goes, "That sucks." And it was the first time I'd ever heard him say something that wasn't
right.
part of a broadcast, and I was like, "All right, like, here he is. This is cool." And he's just a really nice guy. He's very approachable. People come into that, in and out of that booth all the time. He's very gracious and generous, and stops and take pictures with him, talks to people. He's a great guy and a great ambassador for the team and for the sport of baseball. And we wish you happy trails.
An icon.
And whatever comes
iconic
next.
Iconic career.
Icon. Really,
like I feel like
a
people
titan of this industry.
Know
yes.
his style. Like, with great familiarity. Not just the tone, but the little nuggets from the press release or the media guide and, like, the knowledge he had of everything, which I always thought must have really been scripted and planned.
Mm.
And according to McDonough, like, the bulk of it is, like, that's Joe.
Yeah.
Joe knows every game he's called. He remembers everything he's seen over the years since, when is it, 1983 or whatever
yeah.
he started doing games. It's really remarkable the things he's been through and seen and remembers and put his own unique spin on.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, there you go. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. You want to call in with any memories of Joe Castiglione. We got room for you there, but we will re-engage with Patriots Monday when we come back. We heard from Jonathan Jones earlier on in the show. We're going to talk about the defense. Maybe it's not as great as we thought it was. We'll talk about that, and we'll revisit what we heard from Jonathan Jones a little bit earlier right after this.